is Lisa Gargano. Dr. Gargano is an epidemiologist with the World Trade Center Health Registry at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. She previously worked at Emory University in Atlanta and also at the CDC, where she developed interventions in domestic and international settings to improve vaccine coverage or vaccination coverage among children and adolescents. Her current areas of research include assessing the impact of disasters on children and factors that contribute to population resilience after a disaster, as well as disaster preparedness. Please welcome Dr. Gargano.
Good afternoon. Today I'm going to talk about the effects of Hurricane Sandy post-traumatic stress disorder on the trajectory of World Trade Center post-traumatic stress disorder. Okay. So some background on the events of 9/11. The collapse of the two World Trade Center towers resulted in a dust cloud that consisted of a highly alkaline mix of pulverized cement, glass, silica, asbestos, PCBs, PAHs, and dioxins. And this covered lower Manhattan and remained resuspended for weeks. In addition to that, fires burned at Ground Zero until December 2001. As well as these environmental exposures, people exposed to 9/11 also had traumatic events on that day, as well as continued exposures to human remains and other reminders for months after. So after the events of 9/11, the World Trade Center Health Registry was put together, and this is a prospective closed cohort study of over 71,000 individuals who were exposed to the events of 9/11, and we monitor the long-term health effects of 9/11, and we do health updates every 3 to 4 years. So to be eligible for the registry, you fell into one of two categories. You were either a responder, so these were people who had done rescue recovery work on 9/11 or cleanup work, or non-rescue recovery or non-responders or survivors. And so these were lower Manhattan residents, area workers, passersby on 9/11, and school students and staff. To date, we've done 4 surveys. Our wave, which we call waves, wave 1, which was our enrollment survey, was done in 2003 to 4, and then 3 follow-up surveys, wave 2 in 2006 to 7, wave 3 in 2011 to 12, and our most recent wave 4 was completed last year. So Hurricane Sandy struck the northeastern United States on October 29, 2012. It was the largest and second costliest hurricane in U.S. history, resulting in numerous deaths and $50 to $65 billion in damages. And the people exposed to the events of 9/11 were also affected by Hurricane Sandy, which occurred near the tail end of our data collection of our Wave 3 survey. And so this map shows the high surge areas. In blue is New Jersey, and in red is New York. And all of the black dots are our Wave 3 survey respondents. And so you can see areas here like Lower Manhattan, where the attacks took place, were heavily affected by Sandy, as well as areas like Staten Island and Far Rockaways, where many of our 9/11 rescue recovery workers live. And so registry resources provided a rare opportunity to conduct a relatively rapid survey of the experiences and physical and mental health outcomes of persons directly affected by Hurricane Sandy, in addition to having previous information on their health and 9/11 experiences. And so the Hurricane Sandy survey, the sample was drawn from those who completed our adult Wave 3 survey. It was a self-administered paper or web survey, and it was conducted from March to November of 2013, and our response rate was just over 51%. The overall survey objectives were to assess Sandy-related exposures and subsequent trauma and physical adversity among persons with prior exposure to the World Trade Center disaster, and to investigate the emergence and amplification and reemergence of post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD from here on out, among persons who experienced 9/11-related trauma. And then finally, to identify factors associated with physical health effects and resilience in this population. So PTSD is one of the most common mental health sequelae among persons exposed to the World Trade Center disaster. And our groups and others have shown that those affected by 9/11-related PTSD fall into different trajectories over time. So this could mean that they are chronic PTSD at every time point, or that maybe they start off with PTSD at the first time point, and then as time goes on, their PTSD resolves. And then finally, our group has shown that having 9/11-related PTSD predicted whether or not somebody went on to get Sandy-related PTSD. And so what we wanted to specifically look at was to identify groups of enrollees who shared a similar trajectory in change of their PTSD checklist score from waves 1 to 3, and compare enrollees in each of these groups with and without Sandy-related PTSD to assess its impact on 9/11-related PTSD status at wave 4, and then to identify sociodemographic factors, Sandy-related exposures, and other factors associated with wave 4 PTSD. So I realize that I use the word PTSD a whole lot, and so I'm hoping this timeline will help all of us keep everything straight. So from waves 1 through 3, we look at their 9/11-related PTSD trajectories. So those enrollees are then put into each of these trajectory groups. And then from there, we look at each of these trajectory groups and look to see how, whether or not, what percentages of those then go on to develop Sandy PTSD from the Sandy survey. But then our final outcome of interest is really 9/11-related PTSD at wave 4. So you know, what we kind of have here is a true pre- and post-event situation, Sandy being the event. And so we're actually able to look at how another disaster impacts whether or not the trajectory of PTSD changes. So our sample, you had to be 18 years or older. You had to complete all four of the registry survey waves in addition to the Sandy survey. And you were excluded if you had incomplete PTSD checklist on any survey. Which gave us a final sample of just shy of 3,200 people. So our dependent variable of interest, so the PTSD checklist or PCL-17 at wave 4. And so this is a 9/11 specific set of questions, self-reported 17-item scale. There are three symptom clusters, re-experiencing, avoidance, and hyperarousal. The symptoms are really rated from 1 to 5, and then summed into a score of 17 to 85. And we use a cutoff score of 44 or greater, indicating probable PTSD. So our dependent variables, some standard demographics, gender, race, ethnicity, and age. We look at their 9/11-related PTSD trajectory. And then we looked at several Sandy-related factors, including Sandy PTSD, Sandy exposure, so this was a continuous count variable of up to 7 items. We looked at whether or not people reported living alone on the Sandy survey as a proxy for social capital. Looked at whether they reported receiving mental health treatment after Sandy or having unmet mental health care need after Sandy. And then finally, on the Sandy survey, we asked 3 of the 5 questions of the re-experiencing PTSD symptom cluster, which asks in the last 30 days, how often have you been bothered by disturbing memories of 9/11 or disturbing dreams of 9/11 after Sandy, or if they felt like they were re-experiencing or reliving their 9/11 experiences after Sandy. So our analyses, we did latent class growth analysis to assign enrollees to a trajectory group for changes in PCL score over time. We did multivariable logistic regression to compare selected trajectory groups with and without Sandy-related PTSD to assess factors related to 9/11-related PTSD status at wave 4. So here are some characteristics of the study population. We were 58% male, 75% white, and 63% were between the ages of 45 and 64 at wave 4. For Sandy-related factors, 7% had Sandy-related PTSD. Our mean number of exposures reported was 1. 22% of people reported living alone. 11% reported receiving mental health treatment after Sandy. And 5% reported having unmet mental health care need after Sandy. And so for those 9/11-related factors that were asked on the Sandy survey, so 24% of the sample reported that they had 9/11-related memories after Sandy, 13% reported they had 9/11-related dreams after Sandy, and 13% also reported feeling as if they were reliving their 9/11 experience after Sandy. So this is what the trajectories look like. We had five in this analysis, and so on the y-axis, you have your PCL score, so the higher the number, the worse. And then on the x-axis is the years since wave one, so zero is our wave one survey. And so we have at the bottom in like the, I guess it's a dark blue, about 50% of the sample population were a low stable group, indicating they never scored above or close to the PTSD cutoff. And then on the opposite, at the top, in the light blue, we have about 4% of the population, which is in that high stable group. So this group consistently had very high PCL scores, well above the cutoff, which is in that dash line. And then we had two groups in the middle there that were kind of non-stable. So these groups had changing PCL scores over time. In green, about 9%, we have the high decreasing, so they start off above the cutoff, and then as time progresses, their scores then fall below the cutoff, indicating potentially resolving PTSD. And then in group four, we kind of have the opposite. So that moderate increasing group, that group actually starts off below the cutoff score, and as time goes on, their scores increase, indicating potentially late onset. So this figure looks at each of those PTSD trajectory groups by whether or not they had Sandy-related PTSD. So that's on the x-axis. And on the y-axis is whether or not they had wave 4 PTSD in blue, or they did not have wave 4 PTSD in red. So first looking at that low stable group, the one at the very bottom, you can see that regardless of their Sandy PTSD status, none of them went on to, or almost none of them went on to develop PTSD at wave 4. And we saw something fairly similar in that moderate stable group. And in the high stable group, so the one that was at the very top of the previous graph, you see here that regardless of PTSD status at Sandy, almost all of them go on to develop wave 4 PTSD, indicating that for these three groups, that Sandy PTSD might not really have any effect on their trajectory and that they kind of stay on the same track. But in those two groups in the middle with those non-stable groups, we see something a little bit different. So here's the high decreasing group. And in this group, of those with Sandy PTSD, 55% went on to develop PTSD at wave 4 compared to 26% of those who did not have Sandy PTSD. And a similar pattern seen in that moderate increasing group. And so it seems like in these non-stable groups that having Sandy PTSD seems to have a biggest impact on whether or not they go on to get wave 4 PTSD. And so for the rest of the analysis, I'm just going to focus on these two groups. And so this is the multivariable regression. And we did separate models for the high decreasing and the moderate increasing groups. And this is the odds of whether or not they went on to develop wave 4 PTSD. And so first looking at Sandy PTSD, as we would have expected, having Sandy PTSD for both of these trajectory groups significantly increased their odds of going on to develop wave 4 PTSD. For Sandy exposures, those in the moderate increasing group, for each additional Sandy exposure they reported, they had a 20% increase in their odds of going on to develop wave 4 PTSD. And looking at the number of people in a household, so those who reported living alone on the Sandy survey had about twice the odds of going on to develop wave 4 PTSD. And similar with the mental health treatment after Sandy, those in the high decreasing group who reported receiving this treatment were about twice as likely to go on to develop wave 4 PTSD. And for unmet mental health care needs after Sandy, this was only significant in the moderate increasing group. And those who reported unmet mental health care needs were 4.6 times more likely to go on to develop wave 4 PTSD than those who did not have unmet mental health care needs. And then these are those three questions that looked at their 9/11 re-experiencing after Sandy. And so it's a fairly similar story for all three in both groups, that 9/11-related memories increase their odds of going on to develop wave 4 PTSD, similar with 9/11-related dreams, and also with 9/11-related reliving, or 9/11, feeling like you were reliving your experiences in 9/11. So in summary, non-stable PTSD trajectory groups were most impacted by Sandy PTSD, and they had increased odds of wave 4 PTSD in the high decreasing group among those who were living alone and who received mental health treatment after Sandy. And for the moderate increasing, the number of Sandy exposures and reporting unmet mental health care need after Sandy. And for both groups, reporting re-experiencing 9/11 symptoms after Sandy were associated with an increased odds of wave 4 PTSD. So limitations, we had used a self-administered PTSD questionnaire, which is a validated questionnaire, but and it's commonly used in these large epidemiological studies, but of course it's not a replacement for clinical evaluation. The registry overall is a volunteer sample, and about 70% of them are self-enrolled, and of course not everybody does every survey, so there's some potential for selection bias. But we also have a number of strengths, a large sample size, long observation period, and what I think is the strongest of the strengths is we actually have pre- and post-disaster data. So our recommendations are for immediate and ongoing mental health monitoring and treatment for disaster and trauma-exposed populations, and that post-disaster, it's important to screen for previous disaster trauma exposure. The study has shown in those that were in that recovering trajectory group that the events of Sandy might have served as a re-trigger and then increased their odds of going on to develop PTSD at wave 4. And then finally, it's important to remember to address modifiable risk factors like unmet health care need and other barriers to mental health treatment, as well as social and economic risk factors like low social capital to hopefully reduce symptoms. And with that, I'd like to thank our enrollees, of course, my co-authors, our funders, and then you guys.